Welcome to another episode of Butterfly Kisses, A Journey of Spiritual Transformation. I am your host, Amy Gray Cunningham, and today I have another wonderful guest. Her name is Eureka Sullivan, and she is a certified life coach, yoga teacher, energy healer, and also a podcast host. We'll talk a little bit more about her podcast, and a writer. She actually just had a new book released. It is called Wisdom Beyond What You Know. And we're going to talk some more about that because it is very interesting what her book is all about. So please help me welcome Eureka. I'm sorry, I probably messed that up again. So
please do it perfectly. Thank you so much, Amy, for having me. I'm so looking forward to our conversation. And thank you for having me.
I'm so honored to have you. When I saw your email come through, I was like, oh, she's so excited. I love everything about what you, your message. And I think you're going to fit in well here. So tell us a little bit about your book. I know that it just came out this year, and you really have an important message with your book. So yes. Can you tell us a little bit about how did you receive the information? And
Yes. I have always loved books, but I not until I started to feel like, okay, I need to write a book, I believed that I can be an author. But here we are, I published my book in January this year, 2022. And the book is, I call it a practical, actionable, spiritual self-help book.
Okay.
And sometimes the feedback that I received on this book is that, great, finally a book I can do something with, like for my own life, because a lot of spiritual books are theory maybe, or ideas or concepts, but I have put in a lot of exercises, coaching exercises, so that someone who's going through this journey with me in the book can actually make a change or experience something, shift something within their own life. And I love that feedback that I received on it so far. The book is really about shifting from, you know, being up in our logic, up in our head, in our mind, and the way we have often shaped our life, being asked to use our logic to solve problems and live our lives, basically the past, you know, decades. It's just the way we've been asked to live, but now it's an opportunity to open up to expanding beyond using our logic, to shifting into our heart energy and connecting with our intuition as well. And through that, we can have a more whole experience of life, putting our heart energy in the forefront and, allowing the analytical mind to sit in the back seat a little bit. So that's kind of the essence of the book. And I outline and present 7 inner shifts in this book that are actionable, practical. And I actually also include some of my own story in this, because of course it's a journey that I share of my own life as well. So it's a mix between story, my own analysis and thoughts around things in these 7 shifts, but also exercises, coaching exercises, experiences that the reader can take and do.
So how did you come to the realization that you could shift from the mind-centered thinking to more of a heart-centered thinking? Where you were more led by the heart than the mind. What was the shift or the catalyst that brought that on for you?
Yeah, the inspiration was really my own life. Because I have not always been an intuitive spiritual life coach or energy healer, or I used to 20 plus years I spent in the corporate world as a scientist and businesswoman, pretty much.
Wow.
And the fulfilling every criteria, if you will, of a successful woman, young kids, career, degrees, you know, fulfilling a, I wouldn't call it a template type of thing, but what success looks like in our modern world, right? So I had everything that I could ask for, if you look at it from the outside. But it led me to a rock bottom eventually, that the universe basically orchestrated a shift for me to, I basically lost my job. I had identified myself completely with my career. And of course, the universe is always kind of hitting where it matters the most to us, because we need to kind of either have a choice, either we go another cycle, or we make a choice to kind of see it as an opportunity for transformation. And that's what happened to me. So I had previously started my connection with yoga. I first became a yoga teacher, and that was before this rock bottom. So there was a some sort of gateway here for me to start connecting my mind with my body and soul. And I think that's really, you know, when the universe really said, okay, Ulrika, you're here for something else. There's something more. And that was actually a sense I've had quite a long time before this rock bottom happened. It was just that I'm the way I run energy, I don't like change, but it, you know, it just has to happen when it happens, right? So the shift I made from going from a highly logical, you know, material kind of way of living to ease and flow, living through my natural energy, doing what I'm here to do, that's a huge, a major shift. And that's what I'm talking about, sharing my experience, but also how I teach others to make that shift without the rock bottom, if you will. So that's how I got to where I'm at. Now, the fundamental shifts are really in terms of increasing our own trust in our true self, basically. We're getting to know our true self more. I call it the true self, which is our essence, and expanding that. There's some idea here around balancing our, we'll need our mind, right? That's an essential part of us. But when we start to open up to our heart energy and connecting with our intuition, there is this balance happening. And for so long, we've resorted to using our mind as the primary source of decisions. But there are actually wisdom that we carry with us that we can tap into. And, you know, that just knowing something is right for us, that's what we're tapping into when it comes to the heart energy and the intuition, this inner knowing. And there's no strategizing in that, right? It just is. So that's the difference I feel that we have an opportunity to tap into and add to our current experience.
What do you tell people when they're faced with a decision to make that logically doesn't make sense to take action in a particular way, but their intuition is telling them to go a different way that logically just doesn't make sense? What would you tell them? If you were coaching somebody, what would you tell them to do?
That's a great question that many, many people are having, you know, struggle with or resistance to. Kind of, do I do what makes sense, or do I do what feels right? And the way I approach something like that is to understand where the original viewpoint comes from. What is, and as you mentioned, if there's something that logically or sound is right, it's often based off of the external circumstances. For example, it doesn't make sense for me to sell the house and move to Florida, right? Because I have such a great environment here in my comfort zone, right? For example. And maybe I'll even make a loss on the house, or it might be whatever situation. But my job as a coach is to open up and allow a person to have a 360 view of this decision. And that's where it's coming in, right? What is the opportunity on the other side? Even if I lose money on the house, what can that bring to me if I make this decision? So it's allowing to have a 360 view of the decision. And often what comes out there is that the right decision is what feels right. Because the difference between how the mind and logic work and how the heart and intuition, I'm not putting them up against each other, but the difference is that in our logical world, there is always a pro and a con, a good and a bad, and a right and a wrong. But when it comes to making decisions from the heart and intuition, that it just is. There's no duality. And that is when there's no, you know, this, should I do this or should I do that? We just know. Does that make sense? So the question becomes, what do I want to lean on? Do I want to be living a life where I have to strategize and put up all the pros and cons and ups and downs and often it's comparison and expectations and all of those things that comes on that logical side, right, in our strategical world. But when it comes to the heart and intuition, it is what's right and what's true, what the truth is. That's what we're working with in decision-making through the heart and intuition. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes a lot of sense.
And this is just a layer I want to add on because it's an important one. Our emotions can bring us to place if we that's not right for us. Our emotions are, you know, it can go up and it can go down and it can be over here and over there. What we're working with here is this still, calm energy that just is. Because emotions, like and it depends on how we run energy. Each person is unique in the way we're running energy. Some people need to wait out that emotional wave to be able to make a true decision for themselves. Some people can make that decision in an instant because it's not emotionally based. So that's really where we can increase our self-awareness a little bit. How do I work when it comes to, let's say we take decision-making as an example here. It can be an essential piece of insight that can change the whole environment for us when it comes to making true decisions for ourselves. With true, I mean the heart, like the heart decisions that are not an option. It just is.
When we lead from the heart, there's an inner knowing, I think, that you just know something is that when I think it, and I'm not sure if I'm saying this correctly, sometimes there's that fear that sets in. And I know the difference, but sometimes when I sit with it and I really go within, I can feel the difference.
Yes.
I don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Beautifully explained as well. Yeah. So that's what I teach people to open up to, that ability to increase trust, basically, and use this opportunity to align with universal force, so to say, that has to do with synchronicities and being able to work with your natural energy instead of working against it. Because when we feel that we flip-flop in a decision or we feel resistance. That's often because the mind is involved and that we're working against our own energy. It doesn't have to be that way.
I learned, it's funny, this weekend I had several instances where I reacted to situations that didn't put me in the very best of light, I should say, because I reacted from a place of fear, and it came across that way. And looking back on it after a couple of days after the situation, I was reminded that from my guides that everything that happens in my life is an opportunity for me. It's neither good nor bad, but an opportunity for me to see things from a new light and another perspective, and to bring light to it from the place of love. So I thought that was a pretty interesting way to look this past weekend, because like I said, my experiences did not put me in the best of light. Unfortunately, I was not my normal loving self, but that's okay. We all are human as well. So, you know, you had mentioned in just a few minutes ago about the seven shifts in your book. Can you explain a little bit or walk us through a little bit of the basics of these seven shifts? What do you mean when you talk about the seven shifts so the listeners can?
Yes, I'm happy to. So the seven shifts are I put them like shifts because it brings a practical aspect into and some work in between that the reader can take part in. But simply, I can walk you through the seven shifts and in the short version. Mm-hmm. Now the first shift is to get out of the comfort zone and step into willingness to learn something new about ourselves. And that's, if we're not getting out of our own comfort zone, it's nothing else going to happen. Nothing different is going to happen. And it is really the starting point of any transformational journey is to become curious about ourselves. And I think for me, this is really the most important shift, because so many times we have, I come across people who've lived their life by, looking at others, what they haven't done or haven't said, or so it becomes this flashlight on others or the external world. And it puts ourselves into wanting to stay in our comfort zone many times to say, I'm safe here, but all of these people or situations are not what I want, or they're making my life miserable or whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. So, but what it takes to really start this transformational process of evolving is to become curious and make a commitment to ourselves. I think that's the essence of the first shift, because if there's no commitment to ourselves, we're always going to fall back into the comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And for me, I call it my point of no return. And that is when I felt that this commitment to myself and what I want to learn about myself, or this opportunity that I was presented with at my rock bottom to make this choice, it was that commitment. And once I felt like, yeah, I'm on my way to something better, I made a conscious commitment to myself. And after that, there was no way, I couldn't go back. For example, I couldn't go back to my old career, even if I wanted to. Right? I couldn't. that sense of I have evolved into something that I don't resonate with my past self. And So that is really the first shift that I'm talking about in the book. And after that, the process of the next shift comes into when we go from disconnected to self-aware. And what I mean with disconnected is that often we're just not connected with who we are. And self-awareness comes with starting to ask ourselves those questions. Who am I? Even if sometimes that is a very big question. It feels like, I don't know who I am. And there you got it. If you don't know who you are and why you're here, there's an opportunity to learn more about yourself. So how about that, right? Yeah. And once we start to activate that curiosity about ourselves, we can go from, which is the third shift, from codependency to sovereignty. And what does that mean? It means that if we look at our lives, we all have our story of how we grew up, how we, people in our lives, our traumas, our experiences, and all of that. And once we start to become aware of what those codependencies are, and with codependency, I mean how we are affected today by something that is in the past. There is an opportunity to free ourselves from whatever, irrespective. I usually say that there is an opportunity, irrespective of what happened to you in the past, for anyone to become sovereign. And that has to do with being willing to release patterns and habits and things like that from the past, people, to become sovereign, where you are at the top of the mountain in your own life. Because then we become more available to connect with the universe and be in that dynamic. But if we're codependent, it's always going to be a lot of other factors that can throw us off, right? So huge shift. And I talk about that and give some tangible ways we can start releasing codependency. And the fourth shift is to go from, I think it is the, oh, here, this one is really good. It's many of us on the spiritual path, we learn. There's always a new tool or a new ritual or a new set of crystals or cards or whatever it is that we are drawn to as to learn new things about. Personally, I have been very deep into astrology, and I have learned so many divination tools, if you will, along the way. But that's not the point. But the shift here is to actually move from this learning mode, like get more and more in, to actually embody, apply what we've learned, mm-hmm. and become that. Mm-hmm. And that's a shift that a lot of people get stuck here. They keep learning. And let me go to another retreat, right?
Never apply what you learn, yes.
So that one is a huge one that I give some tips also, like what it takes to actually embody your path and your transformation. And then the rest of the shifts, I know this can be a little long, but it has to do with going from pushing to manifesting, like that energy of go-getter versus allowing. And then it's also about the shift from being an individual to multidimensional. So I hope that gives a little, I can talk a lot about what this is all about. This is kind of the little sample of the shift.
Yeah, no, that's perfect, because I can totally relate to the learning and moving into the applying, because I've got more books on how to do spirituality and how to do all the tools. And it took me a long time to get to actually practicing and embodying the path and what it means for me. And moving into and standing in that power.
Yes. Yes. And actually have that experience within yourself, because when we learn, it's often this taking in but it's still kind of a mental process. Mm-hmm. But when we embody, we become. Mm-hmm. And it's an experience involved in that. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of times, you know, you can read something and you can regurgitate exactly what you've read, but until you actually practice and put into practice what you've read and actually experience it for yourself and have that experience under your belt and know what it feels like and what that energy feels like and what that experience feels like within your body, then it's hard to explain it to somebody else.
It's a complete different thing. That's why when I wrote my book, I didn't want it to be just a processing experience, right? Somebody read a book and mm-hmm. then it sits over there and I learned a lot, but it sits over there. I'm not doing anything with it. That's why it was so important for me to have not only practical exercises in there, but I still believe that, you know, that long-term experience with it was so important that I didn't want to leave the reader hanging. So I created this extension experience where they can actually go and come with me to embody what's in the book. And it's through a membership. It's like a up to a year experience to go through this shift, because a book is great, but it, for me, it's often, and I have tons of book on my, I'm like you too, like tons and tons of book here that I often consult, but it's, if we think about it, how much of these books have we really applied what's in them? And that's what I wanted to create with my book, because I did not want it to be a mental experience. If I'm writing about embodying and living from the heart, and yeah. So anyway, so that's the additional experience I offer that goes with the book pretty much.
You bring up an interesting point when you were talking about living from the heart. Can you give an example of living from the heart? When we talk about, for somebody who does not live from heart, that primarily all lives from making decisions from the mind, and it's all mm-hmm. very logical and systematic. And what do you actually mean by living and making decisions and living from the heart? What does that look like in an everyday life?
I can give you just an example of before and after.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
Because if you knew me quite a few years ago now, in the morning, waking up, I would have my phone on the nightstand. I would have almost like a to-do list with 10, 12 things that I may have woken up during the night and added to. When the alarm rang, I ran up, grabbed my phone, in the shower, grabbed a cup of coffee on the way out and in the car, commuting up to almost an hour and a half to work. Mm-hmm. That was the energy of not living through the heart, right? That was completely, in a strategical, logical way. But I'm going to, like, this was me, honestly, it was. Now, how does my morning work look like now? I lay in bed. I do not have an alarm going off. When I wake up, it's still dark. I put my hands on my body to do a scan. Like, how does my body feel today? That's the first thing. Like, how does my body feel? And I'm still kind of processing the night, coming slowly out of it. I sit up, I do a meditation, like I'm awake. I slip into a meditation in my bed. I sit up. I like to sit up. Some people like to lie down, but I do a meditation. I connect with my body. My pace is slower, much, much slower in the morning. I read the energy of the day. I use, for me, now it comes naturally to use Oracle tarot cards. So that it may be different for others, but that's what I use. I look at the energy for the day, messages that may come through from my guides, and I do some journaling. So the first thing I do in the morning is to connect with me, my true self, my connection with my guides, the universe. And that's how I start my day. And that's just an example of how that then directs the rest of my day. There might be insights coming through, things that has to do with decisions or priorities that may not have been clear the night before. It becomes quite clear. So that is what I use to direct my day. Does that help?
I love it. It sounds similar to my day, but I still do wake up with the alarm. And unfortunately, I don't have the luxury of laying in bed because I have a Charlie and a buddy that love to lay on top of me and lick my face until I get up to go feed them breakfast. So
yeah, and it just intentionally, you know, I include some body movement, whether it's yoga or breath work or something like that. But it's, I think that what you're saying too, is that the importance is to tune into ourselves and that can set the whole pace for the day. Yes.
I do sit and meditate and journal, and I spend the first few hours every morning, and I try to make sure that I get up at least 2 to 3 hours before I have to get the day started, because that is for me when I connect with my body, with my soul, with my spirits and, you know, my spirit guides, and that directs my day.
Yeah. And I can't imagine starting my day in a different way. The days I have to go up without doing my thing, it's like I'm off all day. Like I'm not really in balance. Right. So the impact that it can have on your day, whoever is watching or listening, can be immense. If you feel anxiety the first thing you're waking up in the morning, ask yourself, am I starting my day the way that I need? Mm-hmm. It's very different for everyone, what works for. So, but it's an energy shift. And whatever we do to create that energy shift, it's very personal, and it's an inner journey to come to what works for us, right? And instead of in the opposite direction, like, there's so many templates we can just quickly pick up from somebody else, or, you know, the next diet or whatever, but it might not work. And that's what for us, and that's what people miss to ask themselves, is this for me?
I remember when I would first wake up in the morning thinking, oh, I've got this to do with this and this, and I've got this meeting, that meeting. And, you know, I would be overwhelmed before my feet even hit the floor. And now, you know, I wake up to a beautiful puppy dog staring me in the face, and I'm like, oh, today's going to be a wonderful day. We get to go do this and we get to go do that. And, yeah. You know, you get to make a choice about how your day gets started.
Yeah.
And when I do that, then I know my day is going to be a whole lot better than it would be if I choose it a different way.
And I know the question that's going to come into some people's minds here, but I don't know how to change my morning. Like, I have kids, they come in my room, like there's so much going on from the time I open my eyes, right? A lot of people feel that way. Like, how on earth am I going to do something differently? Because it's already so chaotic. Mm-hmm. But for anyone who feels like that, it starts with you. And you know it starts with you. But for anyone to feel better, we need to create space for ourselves in our life and not put ourselves at the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to time, care, self-care for ourselves. And that's part of one of my missions is to, and that comes with living from the heart and intuition, is to allow ourselves to be at the top of the mountain. And it starts with that willingness to go from and making a commitment to ourselves.
Well, and you said that the first one is about being curious and making a commitment to ourselves. And I think it's also about making a commitment to doing things a little differently. Yeah. Because if we continue to do the same things, we're going to continue to get the same results.
Exactly. And that's the comfort zone that comes into play, right? And it's completely understandable that the comfort zone is where we feel safe. But if we're not happy in the comfort zone, that's an imbalance, right? It's one thing. Some people are happy in the comfort zone. It's like, I don't want to change and I'm happy. I'm all good. Fine. But if someone is unhappy in the comfort zone and feel that resistance, that means that there is an opportunity to ease up that resistance so that you can allow yourself to feel ease, flow, harmony instead. And everyone can do this. Everyone can do this. And it comes with that little tiny bit of willingness to do something differently or see something differently. And yeah.
I heard the other day that our bodies are wonderful antennas because they'll let us know when it's time to change. When we feel disease or we feel discomfort or we feel the little bit of tension, that's when we know that it's our body's way of saying, okay, spirit's saying it's time for change, it's time to move. But our personalities or our ego, it's their job to keep us in the same comfort zone because that's where everything's safe.
Yes.
Everything's, you know, they know, the ego knows what's going to happen, even though it's continuing to make us unhappy, but at least the ego knows what to expect.
Totally.
When we step outside that comfort zone, we don't know what to expect until that becomes the comfort zone.
And exactly. You're bringing up something really, really important. And it's that wisdom of our innate wisdom that the body holds already. There's nothing we need to learn. And that's the difference, right? In the mind-driven world, we need to learn, we need to go to school, and we need to get trained and skills. But on the heart-centered way of tapping into ourselves, there is already so much wisdom within ourselves, within the body. And if we learn how to listen or we prioritize to listen to our body, we often have the answers there. And it's this, yeah.
Going within.
Yes, going within. And I in the book also, I talk about a concept called inner transparency.
Good words.
And it's that, it's the combination between honesty, but it's also not only, it's honesty from inside and out in a way with ourselves, because inner transparency is what we feel on the inside or how we see ourselves on the inside, who we are, also shines through on the outside. And many times, I hear so many times that when you get insights about yourself, somebody views you in a certain way, or you view yourself in a certain way on the outside, but then feel differently or perceive yourself differently on the inside. That's also a resistance that can be more, you know, transparent in that sense. And we feel harmony when we are applying inner transparency. It has to do with boundaries, obviously, but It's also self-worth and self-love that can, help us with this inner transparency. So, yeah, lots of fun things.
I love where we're going. Well, what are like two or three tangible steps that people can take to start the journey from the mind living to heart-based way of living? Besides buying your book.
Yeah, besides buying your book. I would love everyone to get a copy, because the first step is really to know your story. It's one of the things that we rarely go back in time and see our life's story, because the beginning of this is to have a relationship with that and allow ourselves to detach from that somewhat. But it's also to provide ourselves with self-compassion, because if we hold a tight grip on what happened to us or who was in our life that we didn't like or that hurt us, that is always going to be in the domain of what the mind wants to use as a reason for staying in the comfort zone. And the first part of the book is highlighting some of these mind-driven patterns that may hold us in the comfort zone. But it's so important to just be willing to take a look at our story, how we got to where we are. Because it's okay. We're right where we need to be. There's nothing that is wrong where anyone is right now. What has happened to us? We're right where we need to be. But to move on, we need to allow ourselves to just let go of some of the things too. Because if we are carrying with us the heavy backpack for some, it's not this space that is needed to allow a new perspective, a new path, growing, right? So that's a critical piece. The willingness around that is why somebody would pick up this book or not. Because if we're not in a place where we are willing to look at our story just to kind of from the outside and see it for what it is, it's very common to hold a tight grip on that past story because it validates us staying in the comfort zone. Does that make sense?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I would also say this, what we talked about previously, the willingness to make space for yourself in your own life is paramount. Because if we don't make space for ourselves or commit paying attention, like doing something differently, nothing's going to change. And if there is this resistance within your life that something's got to change, right? So that's an invitation. However you can create that space within your day for yourself, that's going to be the game changer. And that's why I teach in this book also how important it is to have some sort of, I call it a spiritual practice, but whatever that is filled with, it's unique to everyone. So, and the path is to kind of learn what works for you. What do you enjoy? What do you love? Because you want to have a practice that you love, not that somebody else has it, because you love it. And that's a huge difference. That's the heart connection again.
So does it matter if you meditate or if you do yoga or if you like to go walking instead of meditating or if you journal instead of, or you type instead of actually writing? Does it really matter exactly what it is you're doing as long as you're actually connecting? Because I know for everybody it's, you know, it may be something different, and for some people they may beat themselves up because, oh, well, I don't meditate, so I'm not spiritual, or, you know, oh, I don't like to write, so, or I journal, so I, you know, I can't do the spirituality thing.
I would say that the most important part here is what you said, is to allow yourself to connect with yourself in whatever way works for you. The myth around meditation is very strong because people in general come to me. I teach meditation as well. And it's many are coming to me to say, I'm not doing it right. Am I doing it right? Like, I can't sit still. Like, what I say to a person who says, I can't meditate, it doesn't work for me, it's fine. You don't have to meditate. But often underneath that worry or resistance to meditation comes that they have been told it has to be done in a certain way. You have to quiet your mind, or you have to sit 20 minutes or whatever it is. Or you have to sit on the floor cross-legged. No, it doesn't have to be any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because meditation is simply quiet time with yourself and your soul. And that can be done outside in nature. It can be done wherever you choose that you feel it's, you have a connection with that still part of yourself that is not emotional, that is not worried, or it's the connection with yourself where you are still and your mind does not have to be empty. That's a very common myth, because our mind cannot be empty or quiet. But what we can do is to notice what the mind is up to and say, hey, there is that thought again. Let's go back to that quiet space within myself. And the mind can, you know, you can rest over there. But right now I'm with my essence, my heart, my soul. So it's that meditation many times can be just the process of noticing what the mind is up to. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But I do find meditation in what way works for in an individual. And it is that trust in yourself that what works for you. And that's it. But I find journaling extremely powerful. So I do teach and recommend intuitive journaling, because that's basically a download. You learn how to download without your mind stepping in and saying, this is not right, or you can't write this, or it's the wrong word, right? When we do intuitive journaling, it whatever comes down on the page. And that's essential way of learning about ourselves and our true self.
I love journaling. I have a whole trunk full of journals from teenage years all the way up through now.
And it's very healing. It's a very healing practice. And if somebody's watching or listening this and you don't have a journal, you maybe have a diary. A diary is a different thing. A journal is a space only for you, mm-hmm. and whatever comes down on the page, and you can learn so much about yourself that you didn't know of. Wisdom beyond what you know, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting, the things that come through when you're writing. Very interesting. Well, how can people find you? Where can they find you at?
You are welcome to visit me on ericasullivan.com, or I also have my book page, wisdombeyondbook.com. Go there and you can download. I give you a free chapter if you want to take a peek at the book, or there's also options to purchase the books in different ways on my website. So yeah, I invite you to join me there. And I'm also on social media. I have a podcast, New Light Living podcast, and it's available on any major podcast distributor if you want more inspiration there. And
perfect. Well, I will have all of that in the show notes as well. And one final question for you that I ask all of my guests that I love to hear the answer on. If you had an hour to speak with someone on a park bench, whether that person be in spirit or in body, who would that person be and what would you talk about?
Very interesting question. I think I would invite someone like Dalai Lama. I find him a person who is very close to living a multidimensional life.
Mm-hmm.
And I have always been fascinated by his perspective on things. And yeah, I really feel that he because I was when I was training to become a yoga teacher, I was trained in the Tibetan way of, I also visited Nepal and hiked in the Annapurnas there. So I have always been drawn to the Tibetan mindset, if you will. And one thing that hit me that when I went to Nepal, that I also see, of course, in Dalai Lama, is this incredible compassion and happiness for what is. And I saw that in families that I visited while hiking in the Himalayas, families who did not have anything. But they invited an international group that I was part of into their home. We sat down with a cup of tea that they prepared for us and sat on the floor, and we had a conversation. And that really made an impression on me, you know, that, and they were so happy, but they didn't have anything, right? But they had the connection, they had the love, the compassion, and the conversation. And I see that as something, there was something in me there that told me that there is something much more than what we're striving for in the modern world right now. And this was like 20 years ago, more than that. I had that experience with the Nepalese and Lishan families. But I see that being expressed in Dalai Lama when he's kind of more on a bigger stage as well.
He would be an interesting person to sit and chat with. And just, yeah. Very cool person. Thank you.
Welcome.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your book with us and your stories. And I really appreciate you.
And thank you so much, Amy. I love this conversation. I'm sure we could go on and on, but
I know.
Unfortunately, we have to end this conversation now. Thank you for the opportunity. And thank you, everyone who's listening or watching.
Yes. Thank you all for joining us today. And I really appreciate your time today. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me on another episode of Butterfly Kisses, A Journey of Spiritual Transformation. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe by hitting the subscribe button. This way you won't miss it when a new episode is released. Also, if you're interested in learning more about Akashic Record readings, you can schedule a free 15-minute consultation with me by visiting my website at amygraycunningham.com. Again, thank you, and remember, always spread your gorgeous wings, my friend, and fly. Until next time, see ya.